Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Sounding like I'm breathing hard, it's because I needed to run to the microphone. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. Does it qualify as a beautiful Sunday morning, just if it's not raining for a change? But it is. It's a beautiful Sunday morning because we're here, we're up, we're alive, we're talking, we're having a good time, and I'm not fighting the traffic. I guess that qualifies as a beautiful Sunday morning here in Charlottesville. Thank you so much for listening to 94.7. Sunday morning wake-up call. This is Rick Moore. And you know what? I'm not hungry. I had breakfast. That also makes it a beautiful Sunday morning. And that's what we're going to talk about today is hunger. To start the morning, we have a couple guests in the studio. We have Margaret McNett. She's the executive director of Charlottesville's Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here with us today. We also have Michael McKee, the CEO of Blue Ridge Area Food Bank.
Good morning, Rick.
Thank you so much, the two of you, for coming in. Margaret, how was the traffic?
Actually, it wasn't too bad. I just came from Earliesville, so...
So you know the back roads.
Yes.
And Michael?
Oh, Sam. Not from Earliesville, but back roads all the way.
Back roads all the way. So those of you who know how to avoid the major highways here on graduation Sunday. Congratulations to everybody and the families of those who are graduating from the University of Virginia. Enjoy your day. For those who are listening because you're afraid to go out and about or who are stuck somewhere because you didn't know the back roads, we are here on 94.7 today talking about hunger. We'll have another guest with us a little later in the hour from an organization I didn't know existed, the Emergency Food Network. We will hear all about that. But hunger, let's talk right away. Margaret and Michael, again, Charlottesville's Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry, the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. The stereotype versus the reality of hungry people and the families. It seems like the imagery that goes with hungry people is sort of the 1920s Depression era. And that's not what it is anymore.
Well, yeah, there's I have a friend who often says there's no stereotypical face of hunger, and I really think that's true. You know, people come from all walks of life. There's a lot of seniors who are what we call food insecure. Food insecurity is a term we use, meaning that people do not have access to adequate nutrition at all times during the month or during
the
year. That's
the definition of food insecurity is?
Is that people who do not have adequate access to nutritional food throughout the year.
That sounds like, I can't remember the exact word, but the people who, in terms of paychecks, are X number of paychecks away from being homeless.
Exactly. So they may, people may be food insecure just during certain times of the month, like right before payday, or they may be food insecure during certain seasons if they work seasonally. So, so there's a large population of senior citizens, for instance, who are food insecure. Also, food insecurity is very common in families with children, just because of the extra costs of raising a child. And it's all walks of life. A lot of our clients are disabled. We did a study or a poll of our clients and found that over a quarter of the clients who were coming into us could not work. There was somebody in their family who could not work, an adult, due to a disability. So There's all different kinds of reasons that people may not have access to adequate nutrition.
Yeah. And we see what Margaret described across the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank's entire service area. So the food bank works more like a nonprofit wholesaler. We aggregate food from all over the country, and we distribute that food to frontline organizations like Loaves and Fishes. And we cover about 25 counties, or nearly 30% of the state. And the changing face of hunger that Margaret described is something we see in every county that we serve. And I would say since the start of the recession, we've seen tremendous growth in the number of people who are working but still unable to put food on the table. In fact, 60% of the households we serve now report someone in the home is working. And that is really counter to what most people would expect to hear about the clients of a food pantry or food bank.
When doing my homework for the show, I ran across a phrase from one of the organizations, one of the national organizations, that said, "Volunteers at food pantries are frontline healthcare workers."
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that because, you know, adequate nutrition is so important for all aspects of health. I mean, people who have adequate nutrition have better health outcomes. You know, there's a lot of health-related disease, I mean, a lot of nutrition-related diseases such as hypertension, diabetes. These all can be alleviated by good nutrition. There's also a lot of evidence over many years that shows that children who have adequate nutrition have better outcomes also educationally because their cognitive processes work better.
Do we have any statistics? I realize, you know, we always talk about statistics being numbers that can be generated to prove whatever tale you're trying to tell. But I do believe that oftentimes in stories like hunger, sometimes people aren't cognizant of exactly how many people we're talking about.
Yeah, it is a huge number. So we collect statistics monthly. This is as close to real time as I think we could get. And we find that in the last fiscal year ending last June, we served through our partner agencies an average of 118,703 people per month. 118,000 people a month. To give you a visual on that, if you were to line 118,000 people up shoulder to shoulder, Rick, the line would stretch from this studio on 29 down to the bypass, over to 64, out through Crozet, up and over Afton, and into downtown Stanton. So for the listeners who are in the car, imagine driving that far, seeing a line of people who are lining up at food pantries every day of the month.
That's a fascinating, disgusting number. How has it grown in the past few years? Because as I'm doing my homework, and I constantly say that because I feel like I have to be prepared. I can be the Joe Schmo who knows just enough to ask the silly questions. Again, by the way, we are talking about hunger. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, but you don't have to be progressive to want to know about hunger and learn from people in the studio today. Margaret McNett from Charlottesville's Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry, Michael McKee from Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. I found this great article from National Geographic. Go to nationalgeographic.com and look up Food Features Hunger. It gave some statistics. 48 million people going hungry in 2012, a five-fold jump since the late 1960s, including an increase of 57% since the late 1990s.
That's right. And in fact, We've seen in our region an increase of about 70% since the start of the recession. So think about it. Unemployment has come back down to near pre-recession levels. Real estate has bounced back up. Everyone's 401ks are doing much better. But we're serving 70% more people. And not only are we serving more people, but they're telling us that they are relying more heavily on our services. 60% say they now consider a food pantry a main source of food. Now, when I say that, perhaps at a community gathering of one sort or another, the first question I get is, well, how many of those people are taking advantage of the system? How do you know who really needs the food and who might be scamming you? And it's so fascinating to me. And I can see Margaret taking a deep breath at this as well, because I'm sure she gets that question.
Right. The rolling of the eye muscles. I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah. So what we're seeing is really the fallout of problems in our economy that date way back before the recession, you know, 2-3 decades now of wage stagnation, the effects of globalization. So often our ideas of the world and of our country are rooted in post-World War II America, this idea that if you work hard, you will always get ahead. That's all it takes. And the reality over time has been to prove that wrong, that you can work hard, be willing to work hard, but jobs have left people without advanced skills behind. Mm-hmm. And in the recovery from the recession, the majority of the jobs that came back are service sector jobs, and you can't support a family, you can't put food on the table working for $9 or $10 an hour. And so what we've seen is this complete shift in the population we're serving. The labor market has put so many people in line at food pantries, and there is no short-term fix. So the idea that well, we're breeding dependency in the population is such a misnomer.
Back to that National Geographic article. In 1980, there were a few hundred emergency food programs across the country. Today, there are 50,000. Let's get specific for a few minutes. Again, Michael McKee, CEO of Blue Ridge Area Food Bank, Margaret McNett, Executive Director of Charlottesville Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry. Today, as we talk about hunger here on WPVC, Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Margaret, let's talk about Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry. Michael mentioned how large the food bank is, so let's talk about what a smaller group does, and then we'll go back later and talk about how that works in accordance with the larger program. So, Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry.
So we serve about 5,000, a little more than 5,000 individuals each month on average.
Is that individuals or families?
Those are individuals. It's about over 1,500 families. But we're actually the largest direct distributor of food assistance in Charlottesville. You know, so it isn't, you know, it's an issue in Charlottesville. I mean, a lot of people think about Charlottesville, and it's true that Charlottesville and Albemarle is a very affluent community, but there's also a lot of need as well. I mentioned that term food insecurity earlier. About 17% of families in the Charlottesville area are food insecure, according to a study that was done by Feeding America.
Well, we talk about affluence, and we've done it on this program before. Affluence leads to high rent,
yes,
and a lot of other expensive monthly needs.
Well, food is more expensive in Charlottesville and Albemarle than it is on average in the rest of the state. So, as
you mean
well
just
as
a loaf of bread off the grocery shelf?
Just a loaf of bread off the grocery shelf. So, and then, of course, also housing. in the area is higher than a lot of places in the state. So all these things can add up to just making it really difficult to make ends meet. And then also what Michael alluded to, which is that there are a lot of underemployed people or people who just their wage has not kept up with the economy. So we have a lot of clients who work full time or have an adult family member in their household who is working full time and they still can't make ends meet.
Is this organization Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry? Is this a religious based organization? The never ending food, feed everyone who needs it.
Well, that is where the name came from. We were started as a ministry of a local church, First United Methodist downtown. But we grew very, very rapidly in the first couple of years. We grew about 41% per year in terms of the number of clients coming to us. And then we leveled off a little bit until the Great Recession and we started growing again. So in 2011, we became an independent nonprofit. And we still work a lot through area partnerships with churches, and a lot of our volunteers come from churches, but we're now independent from First United Methodist.
Does a lot... And I have to use that sort of ambiguous term because I couldn't even begin to tell you a statistical percentage. But when you look, when you go online and just take a gander at the names of the pantries, religious-based organizations fill a lot of the organizations that are out there helping provide food service to the families and the individuals in need. Does that affect the mission or the manner in which this is done? Do you need to sit down for a service? Do you have to give, you have to sign for the faith in which goes with this before you take the food with you? Do you have to pray before you walk out the door?
No.
And certainly what we have found through our research is that the vast majority of food pantries are indeed affiliated with churches or some faith-based organization. And it's just been the tradition. When you go back decades and centuries, the church is really the source of, or has been the source of basic assistance. But no requirements are made of the people seeking assistance. The food assistance really is just an expression of the generosity of the people working in these programs. I will say that they really represent an army of volunteers who are making this possible. And we find in a lot of food pantries, the volunteers are aging. They're in their 70s, sometimes 80s. And there aren't as many volunteers available as there used to be. Few people willing to step up and take over a program as a volunteer. Loaves and Fishes is an organization that has some paid staff, but most are entirely volunteer. And it's something we're quite concerned about because the food bank cannot be successful without a strong network of pantries and community organizations doing the work of direct distribution. But as one pastor said to me not long ago, you know, the need has nearly doubled. We're serving nearly twice as many people, but I don't have twice as many people in the pews. We don't have twice as many volunteers available to us. So we are quite concerned about the ability of our network of 200 organizations, somewhat like Loaves and Fishes, able to sustain this over the long term.
11:18 here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. We are talking about hunger, the growing problem with hunger, the more people who and families who are hungry, food insecurity, the word or phrase that was defined early in the program. Margaret McNett from Charlottesville Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry, Michael McKee from Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. Margaret, talking again about Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry, you seem to have a different serving model than the stereotypical of here's your bag. Talk about that.
Yes, exactly. We actually made this change just this past year. Previously, most of the food, we did have some food that was what we call choice, but most of the food was prepackaged in bags and boxes. But in the last couple of years, we started to look at best practices for food pantries, and we came across this idea of client choice, which is a method of distributing food that is more like a grocery store. And so we started that in August, and it has really been overwhelmingly positive reception, both from our clients and our volunteers. It's more dignifying. You know, think about it. If you were to go to the grocery store and somebody, the clerk were to say, here's a box. This is what you're going to eat this week. It wouldn't be very heartwarming experience, to say the least. And so this allows people to pick food that they and their families want, both for taste reasons and for health reasons. A big driving force behind it was we did a client survey, and we found we didn't ask about that per se, about health, but we found that the most common free-form comment was, I would like to be able to choose what I want for health reasons. So it's been a great change.
You also had, when I went to your website, again, we'll post these websites on the podcast, cvillepodcast.com. You can go to Sunday Morning Wake Up Call and find this, find the recording for this show. We'll have the link to all of these organizations, because you can go and check out their webpage, find out more information, find out how to volunteer, find out how to make a donation for any of these programs that specifically catch your attention. But one of the things that caught my eye at the Loaves and Fishes site was when you talk about the client choice model, was you had a few stories from both sides, from both the person or the family coming through to get their food, and from your volunteer, that I found, I guess, heartwarming is the proper word. Do you remember any of them?
One of my favorite stories is the first week it was around maybe the first month that we did the client choice. One of our volunteers was going through the line with a client. And a lot of people talk about stereotypes. A lot of people have these stereotypes of takers. People who come to food pantries are takers. And she was going through the line with one of her clients and came to the potatoes. And there was one bag of potatoes left. And she said, oh, look, you got the last bag of potatoes. And went to put it in the client's cart. And the client said, I want to share the bag of potatoes with the person behind me. Another example is just how many people have told us that they are gratified to not take food because they want somebody else to have it and they're not going to use it. So from the client point of view, that has been a real heartwarming thing. And then also from the volunteer point of view, we pair up a volunteer with one volunteer with each client who goes through to help them know what food allocations they're allowed. And the volunteers have just really enjoyed getting to know our clients. It's a little like 10-minute period of time where they form a little relationship and they get to know the kids and they find out the kids like chicken nuggets, and they're small talk kinds of relationships, but they are very heartwarming, I guess, relationships that they get to form.
That's Margaret McNett, Executive Director from Charlottesville Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry. We'll be right back. And back in action here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We are talking about hunger. Hopefully you're not hungry if you're listening, and which makes it difficult for you to possibly understand exactly what the problem is. Michael McKee here, CEO of Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. You gave us an example of the number of people. I'd like you to do that again. WPVC 94.7 is located in the Seminole Square Shopping Center. For those who've been in town for a long time, where the old giant grocery shopping, the old giant grocer was here at Hydraulic Road and Route 29, and you were giving us the visual of the number of people.
That's right. So the food bank, through our partner agencies like Lowe's and Fish's and Emergency Food Network, serves an average of 118,703 people a month. And if you line that number of people up shoulder to shoulder, the line would stretch here from Seminole Square down to the bypass, down over to 64, out through Crozet, up and over Afton, and out to downtown Stanton. That's how many people our network of 205 partner agencies in 25 counties is serving every month.
I just find that to be, it's an overwhelming visual image. And I guess that's...
Well, and what's more than just the sheer number is who they are. And we talked about working families, but you know, half of the people we serve are children and seniors. Children are about 40% of the people we serve, seniors around 10%. So half the people are especially vulnerable. Poor nutrition, food insecurity can have profound and very lasting effects on kids, interfering with their ability to learn. And we find that seniors who are food insecure are 50% more likely to have heart attacks and other serious cardiovascular events in their lives. And we expect the number of hungry seniors to double in the next 9 to 10 years, largely due to changing demographics. So we're talking about a vulnerable population and one that's not going to be contracting anytime soon.
Again, we are talking about hunger here. We have Michael McKee from Blue Ridge Area Food Bank, Margaret McNett from Charlottesville's Lowe's and Fish's Food Pantry, and we just had Mike Signer walk in from the Emergency Food Network. Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me. Thanks for focusing on this topic.
Well, it's important. We're so glad to have you join us here. So Emergency Food Network, when I was sort of doing prep for today's show, you think about how we have pantries and all these other groups, and I run around to find that, wait, how do we have a specific organization that qualifies as an emergency food group that even stands out amongst these others as being an emergency pantry? Talk about how that comes about and why it's needed.
This organization started, I think, 42 years ago. It was a group of volunteers who decided to set up a group with the mission of, if you needed food, they would set you up with 3 days of food, and they would give you, and you could come once a month. And it was meant to be a pretty targeted operations. So there were, it was downtown Charlottesville. That was the base of operations. It had a, pantry in the, in Meadows Church, which is off of 29. And over the years it evolved, some, but it basically kept that single focus on emergency food once a month. If you were referred by somebody, if you're self-referred, then you could come once a month. So, if you were referred by a social service worker or a social worker, then you could come more often. And it's a remarkable story. A lot of nonprofits in Charlottesville have mission creep or have they change over the years, or they lose their donors or whatever. And this one has really managed to do just precisely that for 4 decades. And we have about a $300,000 budget. That budget has been stressed because we've seen the same increased demand that a lot of food banks or food networks or pantries have seen around the country. I think a 15-20% increase the last couple of years. And by my perception, that is because of the nature of the economy, because so many people, their bills are increasing, but their wages are staying the same. A lot of our clients are working poor. They have jobs, they have IDs, they have cars, they just need help. And our philosophy has been, so we struck up this really wonderful partnership with the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank, and Michael here, which has helped reduce our food costs like $30,000 or $40,000 this year, because we basically started not being able to afford to get all the food that we needed to supply that emergency need for these folks who came to us once a month. They go to a lot of other food pantries also, and what we have been very non-judgmental about people who need to do this as many times a month as they can. We can only afford to do it for the 1 3-day period, but so they kind of, there are thousands of people in this community who are just are putting together an approach every month to get by. And it's a really awful reality, and we just are trying to help. And Loaves and Fishes is doing amazing work, and we're all kind of leaning on each other. And it's really important, but it is very tragic, the situation a lot of people are in.
Does we've talked now about minimum wage being an issue as food costs increase and rent. And other issues. You've talked about seniors being an ever-growing percentage of those with food insecurity. With the three of you here, Mike Signer from Emergency Food Network and Michael McKee from the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank, Cynthia McNett from Charlottesville Loaves and Fishes, does that make you want to get involved in other areas? Does it make you want to stand up and say, minimum wage is too low, healthcare costs are too high? Is that an issue as well? Do you find yourself, stepping outside of the roles that you play here today and get involved in other areas?
That's such a timely question, Rick. Nationally, food banks are engaged in that question. And, what we call that is, how much do we focus on feeding the line versus shortening the line? And the reality is, there are no other organizations like ours that could step forward and do quickly what we all do together. So we have to do what we do really, really well, because we're talking about feeding people. And it's a much more complicated enterprise than most people would imagine. Food donations are not as plentiful as they once were. We're having to get far more creative in what we're acquiring. So first and foremost, we're focused on our core mission and doing that really well. There is room, I think, for some advocacy. We need to make sure that policymakers, lawmakers, and the general public better understand what's going on, that we don't think, because the economy feels better for some of us, that it is in fact better for all of us. And we need to understand the long-term drivers of food insecurity. In some of the counties that we serve, the vast majority of high school graduates are not going on for any form of post-secondary education, not four-year, not two-year, not certification. That means that are some counties and some parts of our state are graduating young people into underemployment, because they won't have the skills that they need to secure better paying jobs. And that means those kids are going to be graduating into some form of reliance on public or private assistance just to get by. That is a big problem that we've got to solve. So when we talk about advocacy going beyond our core mission, drawing attention to that reality is something I think we can all get behind without taking a stake in one camp or another that may prove controversial.
I think I agree with Michael about just really not getting mission creep for our organizations, but I think another way that we've increasingly looking into to help with those other areas is through referrals and having a robust referral network, because people who need food, they're going to be going and looking for food. They may not be able to find some of the other assistance programs in the area that can help them, but they will find the food because especially, you know, families with kids, when they go to the refrigerator and they open the refrigerator and their kids are crying for food, they're going to find us or find the Emergency Food Network or the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. And so I think there's a real role where we can be good referrers, because we can't do everything, but we can definitely connect people with employment programs and other nutrition programs and other things in the area, free clinic and other areas in the net, in the region that can help them with the skills that they need or education programs and those kinds of things.
In addition to doing what I do with chairing this nonprofit, I'm the mayor of Charlottesville, and one of the reasons that I ran for city council last year was some of these reasons about economic difficulty that people were having, economic development, economic opportunity was like kind of the major reason that I ran. And I'm happy to say that we are doing a lot in the city of Charlottesville to try and increase economic opportunity. We've got a program called the GO programs, which is Growing Opportunity, where we directly create mentorship and apprenticeship programs, which get people into jobs that exist. So there's a program with Farmington Country Club. There's a program with Marriott, with our own transportation program. And that's we've created over 100 jobs through this program in the last 2 years. There's another one called the Community Investment Collaborative, which sort of does micro financing for small startups that people are doing here and gives them training in how to run a business. That's created over, I think close to 100 jobs in the last couple of years, and we give grants to that organization. So there's a lot of, I think, you know, you talk about the metaphors, if you give somebody teach a man to fish, teach a woman to fish, they're going to be better off than if you're just giving them the food that we're doing. But it's a big puzzle. I think there are national trends that at the local level, we're just kind of fighting against a tide of people being underpaid for work they do by very large companies. And I think those companies, Fortune 500 companies, need to basically make a decision at the corporate level that they're going to pay. They're going to use more of their balance sheet to allow people to feed their families and to invest and to have a decent middle class life. And that government has a role to play there, the minimum wage debates. But I think that corporate America needs to understand that they're underinvesting in the generations to come of people. It's kind of on them, and they should do their part, I think.
11:37 here on WPVC, Sunday morning wake up call. Make the frogs go away. Since we are the progressive voice of Charlottesville, I'll read this statement from the worldhunger.org website. Cause of hunger and poverty in the United States. The U.S. political system, which should address the major problem of its citizens, is to a great extent not focused on fundamental concerns of poor people. The top echelon of business has some power to allocate the profits of the enterprise, and certainly they have allocated these profits to themselves in recent years. So we talk about what the United States as a whole could do, but they seem to be taking care of not everyone that they could take care of. Do as those who are taking care of folks who certainly are far beyond the lower. I mean, we're not talking about the folks who are in need that come to your specific organizations. Are not the bottom 1% that might fall into the groups that come to the Haven. Would some sort of are there rules and regulations that aren't being followed in our current society that could help the families? And I'll release Mr. Signer from this question because he is a politician, and I don't want him to lose his, I don't want him to get stuck saying something and his role as emergency food bank that might haunt him later, and his role as mayor of Charlottesville.
You know, I think when you look at the lowest quintile, the bottom 20% in terms of income, that's the group that has really lost ground, not just in the last few years, but the last 14, 15 years. And I think we're seeing the frustration and the fear and even anger in this election season. That's the group that has grown in numbers at our doorsteps. That's the group that has become so animated in this election season. And I think the concern about wages, about jobs, about sustainability of employment has really risen, and certainly the concern around equality in income. So these issues really have risen to the surface faster than I think any of us really anticipated. And I think our policymakers and lawmakers at state and national levels really have to understand what this means and think about in an economy in which, you know, 70% of our economy is dependent on consumer spending. Where do we go if 50 million Americans don't have enough money to even buy food? So I think we've got to look at public policies that do level the playing field more. We've got to attend to the question around wages. We've got to attend to economic development, because we're talking about the backbone of our economy and consumer spending. So just never mind humanitarian perspectives, just sheer economic perspective, it's overdue.
But it seems as though, at least on a national stage, that the discussion, especially amongst hunger, seems to be more about tearing people down for the one or two or however many scammers that people believe to be seen, because the guy on YouTube is shown using his SNAP ticket to buy lobster, versus building people up. So as the phrase you used was shortening the line.
Right.
I haven't heard that discussion at all. That's never a question that gets brought up. It may be brought up on a local level. It may be brought up on a regional or a state level. But in a where it could be used to a greater extent, at least in my belief, I haven't heard that discussion at all.
Yeah, I think that's largely because of the perpetuation of this myth that if people are poor, it's their fault. If they're struggling, it's their fault. If they're going to a food pantry, they're doing something wrong. Because after all, in America, if you work hard enough, you will succeed. And that myth has perpetuated for decades. So we've got to turn that around. We've got to help people understand that a lot of those folks we're serving are hardworking. They're challenged in a lot of different ways, but they're not there because of some character flaw. And when we get past that and we help people, even politicians, no offense, Mike, understand that fact, then we're able to make some ground. But that idea is very pervasive in our culture.
11:43 on the Wake Up Call. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. We're talking about hunger. We got a little macro there. Margaret McNett, Michael McKee, Mike Signer here with us. A lot of M's in the studio at the moment. And back in action on a beautiful Sunday. Congratulations to all the UVA graduates and anybody else who's graduating. A lot of time and effort goes into that, both in the individual and the family. And you probably had food to eat every day to do that.
So just talking about your previous question, which was about, just remind me of how you phrased it.
Well, I said something about how on the national level, we only seem to be tearing people down and not building people up.
Yes, that's a good reminder. So, you know, just anecdotally, you know, because we are on the front lines, we get calls every day from people. And, you know, the vast majority of people who come to us, you know, they don't fit the stereotype. And but I think the problem is that stigma that gets attached, it hurts everybody. It hurts our clients because they don't want to come in for food because they're afraid of that stigma. It hurts people who need to know about the situation because the clients don't want to talk about the fact that they're getting help. I had a situation where, there was a show, about this issue, and they were interviewing clients, and there was a client who did end up getting interviewed, but she had her voice changed and she had her face blacked out because she wasn't ashamed. She said it very plainly. She said, "I'm not ashamed. I worked hard all my life. I worked, you know, she was a nurse. She worked in the healthcare field, and she worked really hard, but she became disabled. And yet, even with that, even with her pride and her work ethic, she still did not want that stigma of having come to a food pantry. So I think this is a really important issue. It's an important issue to really to be advocates for what the real face of hunger looks like in Charlottesville and in Virginia and in the nation.
Question, Mike Signer, Emergency Food Network. When I'm going through the websites and looking around, I did see where the Emergency Food Network lists that you can get baby food and formula.
Mm-hmm.
It just made me think, wow, I just hadn't pondered that thought about how even families with just the youngest kids can be in that position. And I don't know if Loaves and Fishes or other churches, I would think that other organizations, other pantries, other food banks probably have that as well. But gosh, you know, what do you feed a toddler or a baby if you don't have that option?
Yeah, I mean, it's gut-wrenching. It's not that common with us, but it is definitely part of our portfolio, and we have kids supplies. We have diapers also that, you know, and we just when it comes up, I don't think we're ever out of supply because it's, you know, thank God, not that frequent that somebody comes with little kids, but they do come. I mean, I've been there doing distribution. It happens every day from 1:30 to 3:30, and it's happened, and I've been there. And you know, you look at the social safety net, which is what we're talking about, and there are government services for folks that through social services in Charlottesville, and then there are the resources we provide. And you know, there's been research recently about just how exhausting of a job it is to be poor on top of everything else, and how much work you have to do just to get these services. So, and it is, you know, like one of the people are like, well, why are there so many overlapping? Because Loaves and Fishes does amazing work, and they're here. And some of this is just physical. We happen to be right in downtown Charlottesville, so it's nice to have an option that is on Harris Street, right off of Preston Avenue, because folks, it's a big deal getting there. You'd be surprised the rides, how people have to arrange their transportation. You look at the stress with
Try not having a car.
Oh my goodness! I mean, the people in Charlottesville, I hear stories about people who live, you know, near, like in Orangedale, near where I live in Fifeville. It's a fairly low income neighborhood, and there are people there who have two jobs, and the logistics they have to go through using buses to get to their two jobs, on top of dealing with kids and shopping. And then we have we just had a meeting last week talking at a town hall where we were talking about the food desert problem. In the southern side of area of Charlottesville, we have, and you know, fortunately, we're going to start working on it as much as we can, but there's not a good walkable grocery option for a lot of people. And that's called a food desert, where it's hard to go buy affordable food easily. You know, there's convenience stores and so on, but there are reasons that grocery stores aren't situating, a store, because it's a low margin business and all this other stuff. But You know, so we're all tackling this problem from lots of different ways. But I think one of the things in this work, when you do this work, a lot of our clients are the working poor. If you talk, they that's what I said before. They belie your stereotype of them, but they're just the work, the daily life they have to do to put food on the table is very humbling for me.
Yeah, ask that question after you go get your weekly groceries on the bus. Then you can ask that question.
Two buses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about nutrition for a moment. We started the program here with Michael McKee and Margaret McNett. Mike Signer joined us a short while ago talking about hunger and how this stereotype has changed. This is not the Depression era hungry folks in the black and white photos, these skeletal images. A lot of the folks that you see these days, a fair number can even be overweight. So let's talk about the nutritional images that you get today. The box or the bag that's given out, because not everyone has the, what was the phrase you used? Client choice.
Right.
Not everyone has client choice. And so you have folks whose health isn't always the best. How do you account for that? Because the imagery is a loaf of bread, some canned goods, boxes of macaroni and cheese, and whatever else has been donated or the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank has managed to secure. Yeah.
It's looking a little different than that in the last several years. The Blue Ridge Area Food Bank now distributes about 5.5 million pounds of produce, fresh produce, a year. That's more than 20% of the total amount of food that we're distributing. And it's so important because we now know that so many more people consider a food pantry a main source of food. So the food we're distributing is more important in terms of the nutritional content. And we also know through the research that we've done that 85% of our clients, 85% say they intentionally buy inexpensive, cheap processed food as a way of coping, as a way of making the dollars stretch. They know it's unhealthy, but they don't have a whole lot of options. You take $5 into a grocery store, you can buy maybe a day's worth of calories in produce, or you can buy 5 days worth of calories in processed carbohydrates. So which are you going to choose? But we've really changed a lot, and I think pantries like Loaves and Fishes and Emergency Food Network have really been on the front lines of that kind of change, pushing the envelope in the quality of food they're distributing and being very intentional about the kind of food they're acquiring and making available to their clients.
We had this is a big topic at Emergency Food Network. We have a nutritionist who's on our board named Rita Smith, who's wonderful, who does a lot of public advocacy and radio shows and so on. And we have, you know, the client choice model is fantastic, and each organization comes to its own values and what they do. We are pretty firm in the choices that led us to provide this iconic bag of food. And it is nutritionist design, and there's canned chicken in it, and there's peanut butter we actually made optional, and there's a variety of other, we give milk and we give cheese and we give margarine and not butter, and there's each one of these things we've had board meetings about, so you can see how we feel good that it's a balanced package of proteins and carbohydrates and the other and fats and everything else that you need to get through 3 days in a balanced way with this package. The thing I'm probably most proud of in my tenure as chair was introducing local produce. So we came to an agreement with the local food hub, and we actually had a donor agree to fund this program where we just sort of started out providing seasonal local produce that came from here. And it was a question about how much would the clients want it, because you have to cook it. So if you have squash or you have if you have potatoes, it was a question about how popular it would be. And just to Michael's point, it turned out to be unbelievably popular. And we had to quadruple the amount that we were providing. And we ended up raising a little bit more money, thank God, to be able to do it. And then we, with this partnership with Michael and his wonderful folks at Blue Ridge, now we're able to do it you know, throughout the whole year, because Local Food Hub is really providing you stuff that's grown within 100 miles of here, you know, that and some, there are non-growing months, so you do need to have some transportation. So the giving our clients produce has been just a fantastic part, and they feel good about it. They come in and you see their faces light up when they get fresh tomatoes or good apples that are here, and it's just been a it's been another. We also have this extras table, which is part of how we spice things up, where they get to sort of, you know, get the curry paste or whatever the funky things are that don't fit into the bag, and they, but each to each his own, and it's but definitely the produce has been a way to amplify what we're doing for folks.
Yeah, I just second or third that the whole idea of the produce and the clients really loving it. They're again talking about stereotypes. There's a stereotype that people are getting the food, the processed foods, because that's what they want, but it's actually the cheapest food. And one other issue that we've run into is that younger generations of food insecure people don't know how to cook like dried beans, mm-hmm. which is a very nutritious food, mm-hmm. But it does take some skill to cook it. And so another area that we're beginning to move into is providing some sort of instructions, whether it's recipes or even like a little food tastings, which have recipes where clients can learn more about cooking nutritious foods.
When you start thinking about like this interview, we're talking about being empathetic and thinking about the world from the point of view of our clients, which is hard for a lot of people to do. I read this article recently where it was just heartbreaking. It was talking about one of the reasons that poor parents buy the stuff they do with kids is because they can't afford the food waste that happens when you have toddlers throwing some stuff. And I've got twin boys who are a year and 7 months old. So I'm like, just this morning, I see how much can be wasted if they just decide that day they don't want whatever it is you're giving them. And the odds are a little bit higher sometimes with healthy food that it's going to end up on the floor. And a poor parent has a harder time dealing with that reality. So you give them chicken McNuggets, or you give them mac and cheese, or you give them the pre-made high, because you're pretty confident that they're going to eat the fried stuff. But it's a dilemma for somebody who's poor that it's, you know, like somebody who has more money can risk the Brussels sprouts or the, you know, whatever else you're going to try with them. And it's just another reality that our clients are faced with.
11:58, just 2 minutes left here, talking about hunger, something that the majority of our listeners, I'm guessing, probably don't experience in a true way, not at least not in the way that our guests today are working to remove from our conversation. Back, I want to finish up with volunteerism. Certainly everyone here is looking for volunteers. Mm-hmm. We're going to put the podcast up and there will be the links to go to the websites for you to learn more about the sites. And we'll go down the line. I want to start with Margaret from Charlottesville Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry. Are you looking for any particular type of volunteer? And you get about 30 seconds so we can get everybody in there, you know, about the volunteers.
Well, pretty much anyone can come to volunteer. We do have some age limits, you know, like over 8, I think it is, with a parent, and over 16, I think they can come on their own after they come with a parent. But, you know, we have everything from restocking the shelves, which is less, you know, people intensive, to our client guides and our intake workers who are working directly with the clients. We need people in our parking lot, even coming and cleaning during the week, et cetera, all kinds of things.
All right, and Mike Signer from the Emergency Food Network.
We always need volunteers. We tend to have volunteers who stick with us for a very long time. We have a woman who's been with us for 30 years, and you generally have a monthly commitment that's not that burdensome. So you'll stock the shelves, or you'll drive the bags from the pantry over to our headquarters, or you'll once or twice a month, you'll do distribution because we have, I think, 120 volunteers, something like that. And if it doesn't work out with our two locations, we'll send you over to Loaves and Fishes or
Blue Jerry. There are many places you can go.
But we're all big supporters of one another. I think it's a nice thing that's been happening the last couple of years is increased communication and support of the other groups.
And so Michael McKee from Blue Ridge Area Food Bank.
In the Charlottesville area, we encourage the public to look into volunteering at the local food pantries and soup kitchens and shelters. You can go to our website, brafb.org, click on Get Help, and click on Pantry Locator. And that you'll use to find pantries in your area with phone numbers and hours of operation. Please reach out to local pantries in the area and offer your services because they really need it the most.
Thank you very much to our guests today for taking the time to come in. Let's hope that we don't need to have you back next year to talk about where we stand in the situation. Next week, folks, something a little more lighthearted, maybe. Jefferson Madison Regional Library will be here. Talk about book suggestions for the summer. Maybe we'll talk about getting some statistics on things that you can help out in the world.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.